Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Sandra Astor-Stave, and today I'll be reading from The Economist magazine, dated April 6, 2024. We'll begin, as usual, with the World This Week politics. An Israeli strike killed 7 aid workers in Gaza. A drone fired missiles at the car convoy of the World Central Kitchen, a charity that has worked closely with Israel in recent months. Its route had been cleared with the Israeli army. 6 of the 7 were foreign aid workers thought to be the first to die in the Gaza war. Around 200 aid workers have been killed. Their deaths provoked a furious international response. Joe Biden said that Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers. Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that the tragic events in Gaza, but said this happens in war. World Central Kitchen said it was pausing its operations in Gaza, as have other NGOs. In Syria, suspected Israeli airstrikes hit the Iranian border embassy compound in Damascus. 7 people were killed, including General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a commander of the Quds Force, the expeditionary wing of Iran's military guards. He was the highest-ranking Iranian commander to be assassinated since America killed Qasem Soleimani with the drone strike in January of 2020. Benny Gantz, a member of the Israeli War Cabinet, called for an early election to be held in September to renew trust in the government. Earlier, tens of thousands of people marched in Jerusalem, calling for the removal of Mr. Netanyahu as prime minister. Uganda's constitutional court upheld a law that imposes long prison sentences for promoting homosexuality and the death penalty for aggravated homosexuality. It struck down some sections of the law, such as duty to report gay people to the police. Human rights groups accused Russia's Wagner mercenaries of assisting government forces in drone strikes and attacks that have killed large numbers of civilians in Mali. The country's political parties and NGOs have called on the military government running the country to draw up a timetable for a return to democracy after missing a deadline in 2022 and then breaching a promise to hand over civilian rule by the end of March of this year. Police raided the home of Peru's President Dina Boluarte in a search for evidence relating to the origin of her Rolex watches. Ms. Boluarte was being investigated for allegedly enriching herself while in office. She denies wrongdoing and described the raid as abusive, but 6 ministers abruptly resigned, throwing her government into crisis. President Joe Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping held what both sides described as a candid and constructive phone call. The leaders discussed areas of cooperation such as counter-narcotics and climate change, but they disagreed on Taiwan and trade, among other things. China stirred up tensions with India again by designating Chinese names to 30 places in the Indian state of Arunachal Pradesh, which lies in the foothills of the Himalayas. China claims the area is part of South Tibet. America said it opposed any attempt by China to advance territorial claims on the region. Thailand's reformist Move Forward Party came a step closer to being outlawed after the Constitutional Court decided to hear a case that seeks to ban it. The court has already ruled that the party's policy of reforming the law to allow criticism in the monarchy is unconstitutional. Move Forward won a general election last year, but was blocked from taking power by the Royal Army establishment. Taiwan was hit by an earthquake of magnitude 7.4, the country's strongest in 25 years. Most of the damage was in Hualien County in the East Coast. At least 9 people were killed and 1,000 injured. Less than a year after it lost heavily in a general election, Turkey's opposition came roaring back to life in local elections. The Republican People's Party, which is on the center-left, received 38% of the total vote compared with 36% for the ruling Justice and Development Party. The vote is seen as a rebuke to Recep Tayyip Erdogan for his handling of the economy. Since his re-election as president last May, annual inflation has soared to 68%. Meanwhile, at least 29 people died in a fire at a nightclub in Istanbul. The casualties were mostly workers who were renovating the building during the day. In Germany, new laws that relax the use of cannabis came into force. People can carry up to 25 grams of the weed and grow three plants at home, but they can't smoke it near schools or in pedestrian zones. Ukraine carried out a drone attack on its oil refinery in the Russian Republic of Tatarstan, which also houses factories that produce drones for Russia, and to attack Ukraine. The target was around 1,300 kilometers inside Russian territory, the farthest strike that Ukraine has made so far across the border. Meanwhile, a new law was signed in Ukraine that lowers the mobilization age from 27 to 25, allowing the armed forces to expand the draft. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the American House of Representatives, suggested that a vote on a bill that allows military aid to Ukraine and Israel would be held soon. The bill passed the Senate but has stalled in the House because of opposition from Republicans. Mr. Johnson wants to tie his party's support for the aid to concessions from Democrats on things like lifting a moratorium on new liquefied natural gas facilities, and hinted that some of the aid will be a loan. Florida Supreme Court ruled that a state ban on abortion 6 weeks after conception could come into force next month, but it also sent the matters to voters by approving a ballot measure for November general election that would restore the right to an abortion up to 23 to 24 weeks into a pregnancy. The issue will resonate through the South. Women from Georgia, Texas, and elsewhere have traveled to Florida for the procedure after their states banned it. Scotland's controversial hate crime law came into effect, making it illegal to use threatening or abusive behavior to stir up hatred against people on the basis of certain characteristics, such as being transgender. The law is opposed by many, including J.K. Rowling and Elon Musk, for curtailing free speech. The head of the Scottish Police Federation said it is unworkable because people won't understand it. Police Scotland was criticized for a bizarre hate monster awareness campaign. Within the first few days, 4,000 complaints on hate were reportedly registered under the new law online. And now to business. Disney saw an epic proxies challenge from Nelson Peltz at its annual general meeting. Through Treon, the hedge fund, Mr. Peltz was seeking two seats on the company's board to restore the magic, claiming that poor management and box office failures have contributed to the underperformance of Disney's share price. But Bob Iger, the chief executive, fought an extensive campaign defending his turnaround strategy, which won the support of BlackRock, the Disney family, and George Lucas, a film producer. Mr. Peltz reportedly received just 31% of the vote for his claim to a seat. Tesla delivered 386,000 vehicles worldwide in the first quarter of 2024, a decrease of 8.5% year-on-year and its first quarterly decline on that basis since 2020. Investors already rattled by slowing growth in the electric vehicle industry punished Tesla's stock. Figures from other car makers were mixed. Ford and Hyundai reported a big rise in EV sales in America, and General Motors announced a sharp decline. Despite the fall in deliveries, Tesla reclaimed its crown as the world's biggest seller of EVs after BYD sold just 300,000 pure electric vehicles in the first quarter. That is far below the more than 626,000 8,000 that BYD shifted in the last 3 months of 2023 when it overtook Tesla in sales. Xiaomi entered China's fierce competitive EV market when it started selling its new SU7 four-seat sedan, which has lower than expected starting price of $30,000. The Chinese tech company is better known for its smartphones. It took nearly 90,000 orders for the car over 24 hours, though customers may have to wait up to 7 months for delivery. America and Britain signed an accord to build a common approach to ensuring the safety of artificial intelligence, the first agreement of its kind in the world. Although America has far more AI startups, Britain is home to DeepMind, a developer of neural networks that is owned by Google. Britain opened its AI Safety Institute last November. America's parallel institute is still being organized. Microsoft decided to sell its Team Chat application separately from its Office 365 suites around the world. It unbundled the products in Europe last year to avert an antitrust fine from the European Commission. Sam Bankman-Fried insisted that I never thought that what I was doing was illegal after he was sentenced to 25 years in prison for fraud at FTX, a cryptocurrency exchange he founded that collapsed in 2022. The sentencing judge said that Mr. Bankman-Fried had committed perjury during his testimony to the court and shown no remorse for his actions. SLB, the world's biggest provider of oil field services, agreed to buy Champion X, which specializes in production chemicals and artificial lift solutions, such as jet pumps. It is the biggest acquisition by SLB, formerly known as Schlumberger, since 2016. The price of natural gas in Europe fell after it was reported that gas storage in the EU was around 60% full, a record high for this time of year. That will rise in the coming warmer months as gas suppliers are replenished. 2 years ago, Europe faced soaring gas prices amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine and low storage levels. The price of TFF, Europe's benchmark gas contract, now trades around £25 per megawatt hour compared with £56 a year ago. Oil prices reached five-month highs among concerns about conflicts in the Middle East and attacks on Russia's refineries. Brent crude prices closed at $90 a barrel. The Eurozone annual inflation rate fell to 2.4% in March, close to the European Central Bank's target of 2%. Today we begin again, said General Electric, as it completed a transition to three standalone companies, each listed separately on the stock market. GE Aerospace houses jet engines and aviation servicers. GE Verona is the energy business focusing on wind and gas turbines, and GE Healthcare supplies imaging, ultrasound, and IT systems to hospitals. Founded in 1892, GE no longer exists as a conglomerate. Larry Culp, GE's boss, is now CEO of GE Aerospace. The share price of Trump Media, Donald Trump's social media platform, slumped after it revealed a huge drop in quarterly revenue and the annual net loss. Trump Media only recently went public on the stock market. In a regulatory filing, the company's auditors noted that there was a substantial doubt about its ability to continue as a going concern. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump is embroiled in a legal fight with two founders of the business, claiming they shouldn't receive shares to it. China's risky reboot. Xi Jinping wants to escape economic stagnation using a high-tech revolution. His plans will backfire. It is China's gravest economic test since the most far-reaching of Deng Xiaoping's reforms began in the 1990s. Last year, the country achieved growth of 5%, but the pillars of its decades-long miracle are wobbling. Its famously industrious workforce is shrinking. History's wildest property boom has turned to bust, and the global system of free trade that China used to get richer is disintegrating. As our reporting explains, Xi Jinping responds to double down on the audacious plan to remake China's economy, blending techno-utopianism, central planning, and an obsession with security. This sits out China's ambition to dominate the industries of tomorrow, but its contradictions means it will disappoint China's people and anger the rest of the world. Compared with 12 months ago, let alone the go-go years, the mood of China is dour. Although industrial production perked up in March, consumers are depressed, deflation lurks, and many entrepreneurs are disillusioned. Behind the angst lies deeper fears about China's vulnerabilities. It is forecast to lose 20% of its workforce by 2050. A crisis in the property industry, which drives a fifth of GDP, will take years to fix. It will hurt cash-strapped local governments that relied on land sales for revenues and flourishing land real estate for growth. Relations with America is steadier, as a phone call between Mr. Xi and President Joe Biden this week attested, but they remain fragile. Chinese officials are convinced that America will restrict more Chinese imports and penalize more Chinese firms, whoever wins the White House in November. China's response is a strategy built around what officials call new productive forces. These eschew the conventional path of big consumer stimulus to reflate the economy. That's the kind of ruse that decadent West resorts to. Instead, Mr. Xi wants state power to accelerate advanced manufacturing industries, which will in turn create high productivity jobs, make China self-sufficient, and secure it against American aggression. China will leapfrog steel and skyscrapers to a golden era of mass production of electric cars, batteries, biomanufacturing, and the drone-based low altitude economy. The scope of this plan is breathtaking. We estimate annual investment in new productive forces has reached $1.6 billion, a fifth of all investment and double what it was 5 years ago in nominal terms. This is equivalent to 43% of all business investment in America in 2023. Factory capacity in some industries could rise by over 75% by 2030. Some of this will be seen and made by world-class firms keen to create value, but much will be prompted by subsidies and implicit or explicit state direction. Foreign companies are welcome, even though they have been burned in China before. Mr. Xi's ultimate aim is to invert the balance of power in the global economy. Not only will China escape dependence on Western technology, but it will control much of the key intellectual property in new industries and charge rents accordingly. Multinationals will come to China to learn, not teach. Moreover, Mr. Xi's plan is fundamentally misguided. One flaw is that it neglects consumers. Although their spending dwarfs property and new productive forces, it accounts for just 37% of GDP, much lower than global norms. To restore confidence amid the property slump and thereby boost consumer spending requires stimulus. To induce consumers to save less requires better social security and health care and reforms that open up public services to all urban migrants. Mr. Xi's reluctance to embrace this reflects his austere mindset. He detests the idea of bailing out speculative property firms or giving handouts to citizens. Young people should be less pampered and willing to eat bitterness, he said last year. Another floor is that weak domestic demand means some new production will have to be exported. The world has regrettably moved on from the free trading 2000s, partly because of China's own mercantilism. America will surely block advanced imports from China or those made by Chinese firms elsewhere. Europe is in a panic about fleets of Chinese vehicles wiping out its car makers. Chinese officials say they can redirect exports to the global south. But if emerging countries' industrial development is undermined by a new China shock, they too will grow wary. China's accounts for 31% of global manufacturing. In a protectionist age, how much higher can that figure go? The last floor is Mr. Xi's unreliable view of entrepreneurs, the dynamos of the past 30 years. Investment in politically favored industries is soaring, but the underlying mechanism of capitalist risk-taking has been damaged. Many bosses complain that Mr. Xi's unproductive rulemaking and fear purges are even arrest. Relative stock market valuations are at a 25-year low. Foreign firms are wary. There are signs of capital flight and tycoon emigrating. Unless entrepreneurs are more shackled, innovation will suffer and resources will be wasted. China could become like Japan in the 1990s, trapped by deflation and property cash. Worse, its lopsided growth model could wreck international trade. If so, that could ratchet geopolitical tensions even higher. America and its allies should not cheer this scenario. If China was stagnating and discontented, it could be even more bellicose than if it were thriving. If these flaws are obvious, why doesn't China change course? One reason is that Mr. Xi is not listening. For much of the past 30 years, China has been open to outside views on economic reform. Its technocrats studied global test practice and welcomed vigorous technical debates. Under Mr. Xi's centralizing rule, economic experts have been marginalized and the feedback leaders used to receive that turned into flattery. The other reason Mr. Xi charges is that national security now takes precedence over prosperity. China must be prepared for the struggle ahead with America, even if there is a price to pay. It is a profound change from the 1990s, and its ill effects will be felt in China and around the world. A world without American protection. Donald Trump's threat to dump allies would risk a nuclear free-for-all. Nuclear deterrence works, or at least it has so far. To understand how, look at the war in Ukraine. America and Europe arm their allies but dare not deploy combat troops against Russia. In turn, Russia dares not strike at the West. Mutual terror ensures that nuclear powers do not attack each other overtly, just as it stopped the Cold War from turning hot, even though plenty of proxy conflicts raged. A sign of success is that only 9 countries have nuclear arms, fewer than once feared, and fewer than the number of states able to make them. As NATO this week marks its 75th anniversary of the signing of the North Atlantic Treaty, thanks to the generosity of the extended deterrence which America has sheltered European and Asian allies under its nuclear umbrella, it has done so in part to contain foes and in part to dissuade friends like Germany, Japan, and South Korea from going nuclear themselves. A return of Donald Trump as president threatens to sow chaos at a time when the world's nuclear balance is more unstable. His threat to let Russia do whatever the hell it wants to NATO allies that spends too little on defense risks destroying the trust that makes extended deterrence possible. That could produce the nightmarish nuclear free-for-all that America has always sought to avert. As the world's first atomic power, America has long tried to stop others from going nuclear. Wonks calls it the nth country problem. The more countries have nukes, the more others will want them. The likelier the risk of uncontrolled crisis, the greater the constraints on American power, and the higher the danger of America itself will be nuked. Deterrence to superpowers during the Cold War was scary enough. With ever more nuclear powers, it may be an impossibly complex. America thus attempted to prevent nuclear proliferation by an often undeterred but far-reaching strategy of inhibition based on three pillars. Norms and treaties such as the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty of 1968, coercion of friends and foes by diplomacy, sanctions, and threats of military action, and reassurance through military alliances of security guarantees. Extended deterrence is counterintuitive in that America risks the homeland for the sake of allies. The promise firm enough to deter the Kremlin always has been plagued by some doubt. To strengthen it, America has deployed troops with nuclear weapons in Europe and has given a role in nuclear missions. Winston Churchill is said to have quipped that all he needed to defend Europe was one American soldier, preferably dead. Mr. Trump, neck and neck with President Joe Biden in the polls, according to our tracker, sees allies as a burden, not an asset. His contempt mattered less for his first term when the world was quiet, for which he likes to take credit. Now America is deeply involved in wars in Ukraine and Gaza, and clouds are gathering over Taiwan. A nuclear race looms as Russia issues threats and China builds up its nuclear arsenal. Nobody knows quite what Mr. Trump will do. Even he may not be for sure, despite the bluster about ending the war in Ukraine in a day. But his comments, former advisor accounts of his desire to leave NATO and harebrained proposals by putative future ones all point to a reduction of abandonment of American security guarantee to NATO, and so to allies generally. Congressional Republicans' months-long blocking of a bill to provide aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan is a bad omen. Allies who will hope that, as in Mr. Trump's first term, conventionally minded members of his administration will somehow help limit the damage. But some Trump world figures say that NATO countries which do not spend 2% of GDP on defense should not be protected by the pledge that an attack on one ally is seen as an attempt on all. Others propose a dormant NATO in which America withdraws ground forces from Europe while preserving the nuclear umbrella. Such ideas are nonsense. America cannot defend the Marshall East of Europe without protecting supply lines through the laggardly West. And would Mr. Trump risk a nuclear attack on American cities to help Europeans whom he would not defend conventionally? That's all we have time for today. I've been reading from The Economist magazine dated April 6, 2024. I'm Sondra Astor-Stave. So long until next time.